What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of The Avalanche. Warning, you're going to get tired of me saying this, but the Avalanche are still riding the wagon. 9 wins in a row, most recently adding to this being the 4-point back-to-back from this past weekend. We're going to break it all down. Got Bailey, we got Grant, we got Gavin. Also joined today by Grant's brothers, Reed and Quinn. Guys, thank you so much for hopping along. What's bound to be a very chaotic show.
It's a Thanksgiving special.
Okay.
Tell a friend to tell a friend, I'm back.
Reed, I'm actually fairly certain your episode is still the most viewed.
Well, you guys so made a star.
Not the Natchez mini pod where I lost my mind for 15 minutes.
Surprisingly, Reed is doing better than McGahee right now.
That is sad.
So
that's just Reed watching himself on repeat. I don't know if I would take any stock in that.
Yeah, yeah. Do we have feedback on whether people think that Grant's just talking to himself since we all sound like Grant?
No, actually.
Oh, okay.
Surprisingly, okay. The brothers have a little bit of a difference.
Okay, good.
So good. We're fine. Let's go ahead and jump into this. 9 wins in a row, like I said, most recently coming from a 3-0 shutout win against the Nashville Predators and a 1-0 shutout win over the Chicago Blackhawks. We've played 3 games since the 3 of us, and being Bailey, Grant, and Gavin, have met. Also had a kind of gritty 6-3 win against the Rangers. So I guess we'll kind of start with that one. And looking back, Rangers, a really, really good road team heading into Ball Arena. They're a team that, I mean, they've got the talent, I think, to show that they can be a somewhat decent team, but they're pretty low in the standings. And the Avalanche kind of went tit for tat with them a little bit during this game. Ultimately, Cale Makar, I would say, saves the day. Nathan MacKinnon also getting first start in that game. Gavin, I'll start with you, just because that's our normal path for things. Just lead us off with thoughts.
Rangers game was sick. I was actually in person for that one, so that was a nice. Fun one.
So was I.
Yes, we met up and convened.
We did.
But yeah, it was a fun game, honestly, and I'm glad I got to see Cale Makar's wraparound live. I also got to see Nathan MacKinnon's 4-goal game live a few seasons ago, so I think I might be a lucky charm. That might be the thing.
You're never allowed to miss a game again.
Seriously. Mandatory attendance. It was very much a back and forth type of game, at least scoring wise. The Avs were definitely outplaying the Rangers, who were a good road team until they just lost like 3 road games straight. So back to being awful. Have fun with that. Remember when people said Adam Fox was actually better than Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar? That was hilarious.
Avalanche becoming the team that breaks other teams? Because as soon as New Jersey got into town,
for sure,
they kind of fell off a cliff too.
Oh yeah, Vegas, the Golden Knights fell off a cliff once they played the Avs. The Ducks struggled a little bit after that. Yeah, we were just the crusher of dreams. And no, I think it was a great game by the Avs, honestly. With the Rangers, you saw definitely a lot of some top line scoring there. I believe, yes, Brock Nelson is pretty much the only guy to actually beat Shesterkin clean. Like, a lot of the rest is redirections or tap-ins, but
yeah,
big Brock, just give him time and space, and he'll just beat you clean with a wrister. So it was it was overall fun game to watch. Good win, get you your 7th win in a row. And
that was one of the ugliest power play goals you might ever see in your life, though.
You're complaining about power play goals?
That power play goal was more like a breakaway going both ways.
I think the power play goal was necessary given how poorly the PK suffered during this game too, though.
For sure. Something I was worried about a little bit was the PK, because against the Islanders, it sucked. Wedgwood was the only reason why it survived and didn't get scored on. Against the Rangers, it also was horrible. So I was a little worried going into the Hawks game and the Preds, thinking about, like, is our PK taking a dip here? And they button it up. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah. Is that a one-off? Is the Rangers game a one-off? That would, it's kind of what it seems like to me, but I want to kind of get your guys' opinions on this because it did suck. During the Islanders game, during the Rangers game, it was not at its best. And we're talking about a penalty kill unit that is top five in the league. Last time I checked, it was second. That could have changed. But this is a top penalty kill in the league. Was that a one-off after seeing what they were able to do this weekend? And I could throw that over to Quinn if that's if we want to, yeah.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I think that, one, the Rangers were a good road team, right? I think they had lost three straight on the road for a little bit. So they were a good road team, and they had done well, at least on the power play on the road coming into the game. So I don't think you can take too much stock into that right now.
Yeah.
You know, if it does continue later on and throughout the rest of these upcoming few games that we have over the next week or so, then maybe that's something you consider. But Gavin, I think you made a good point there, right? So two shutouts are obviously well done from a PK perspective.
Yeah. I mean, perfect penalty kill. There's not much to complain about there. I feel like I don't have too much else to say on this Rangers game. If anybody else has something to add, Grant.
I guess I think the only thing I have to add is with the Rangers game, you're going up against Igor Shesterkin, and you finally kind of broke through, especially with the Brock Nelson power play goal. The only thing I will say is that there were very many defensive lapses that almost resulted in goals especially against Wedgewood. The one that springs to mind is Malinsky blowing his assignment and Wedgewood having to make a high danger save. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is just sometimes this whole third line so far of Olofsson, Drury, and Kelly is just a mix up, but it is not functioning like the third line has been all season. And you know, that's going to happen with Kelly being up on the third line and not, you know, Landeskog, who's really a second line guy playing on the third line just for chemistry's sake. But I don't know if Kelly's the answer for that third line. It might have to go in a different direction at least.
Yeah, this is something I was talking about with a couple other people too, and saying with Kiviranta back, and we'll touch on that here soon, but Parker Kelly's really, and this is no knock on Parker Kelly, but he's really solidified himself as a really solid fourth line guy. Like that fourth line, he elevates that fourth line. That's kind of becoming his role.
Yeah,
as maybe unfortunate as it might be, which I don't see it that way.
I think describing Kelly does not serve on the third line, girl pop, no. As I would describe it. He's not serving, to put it as simply as possible. He's just not. He's a fourth liner, and you kind of have to survive right now with Brindley, the second coming of Christ, being injured. You have Logan O'Connor also injured as well, seemingly forever. You also have Nichushkin, so you're missing a lot of top line guys right now. So, yeah, I think at this point, I'd rather see Kiviranta go to the fourth line and Kelly back down with Barticov, because at least those two work well together. I don't know. Your bottom six is kind of going to be what it's going to be with all these injuries to your, which is weird because we're not talking about top six injuries for once with the Avs. We're mostly talking about like bottom six injuries, which is interesting.
You're not missing your best guys, and the team is thriving because of it.
Mind blowing.
Crazy concepts.
Someone tell Minnesota.
The Avs of 2024-25 could never.
You're right. They could never.
They could never. They never did.
And they never. That's even a better point.
Let's go ahead and move into. Oh, did you have one thing to add on here? Let's go ahead.
Hold on.
And
I want to throw it over to Reedy there. He's there with his whiteboard and his laptop. He's eager to say something over there.
Just wrote down on the whiteboard here. I erased it. The worst trade in the history of trades, Natchez, 3 points. That's all I'm going to say. Really good season so far at Natchez. I haven't been on the podcast since the season started, but boy, Grant, he makes you look terrible day in, day out.
Reed, I have a question.
Would you say that's
$11.5 million worth of a performance?
Hey, man.
Specific number.
Hey, man.
Pulled it out of my ass.
Hey, man. It's hard to argue. It's hard to argue with how the Avs are doing this season. I mean, this is his first season, full-time Av. And you at the best club in hockey. Now, we can get into this later. I don't think it will last. But as it sits right now, they're looking good. And he's playing well.
Yep.
I did have one more thing to talk about that Rangers game, though. The last thing I wanted to say was I've never seen a team penalize so much and still get away with so many calls.
Yeah, that refing was not
we're really going to do this.
I mean, all of the penalties that were called both ways deserved, but my God, you could have added at least another 3-4 penalties on the Rangers. I mean, Martin Natchez has tripped open ice at the faceoff dot, and the ref they just got off the power play, and the refs like, how am I gonna call this? I just call the power play, guys. Quit making so many penalties.
You sound like a certain radio announcer.
I do sound like a radio announcer. I do.
I mean, they had 12 penalty minutes compared to 4 on the Avs. I think I don't know.
They did, and they still had more penalties that they could have called. There still could have been more.
We're devolving into ref talk. This is ref talk.
No, he went on a whole rant a couple episodes ago. So go listen to
Grant?
That. But yes.
Oh, good plug. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, he went on a whole rant a couple episodes ago, and it was not expected. How long did you go on? For like 10 minutes?
Refereeing or Natchez? On refereeing. Natchez, I already did that in our Natchez episode.
He's already gotten that.
But is it anything mostly of substance? I mean, are you saying anything of substance?
I am saying.
You know, surprisingly, because like our biggest conversation, and we'll move on to the back-to-back here in a second, but like the biggest conversation that we're having about this here is consistency. And like, if you're going to call it one way, you can't not call it the other just for the sake of trying to keep things even. You're going to call a game a certain way. If you're going to call something a penalty and then not call the same thing happening 5 minutes later, like that's inexcusable. If you're going to call the soft calls, but don't call it softly for one team without calling it for the other.
Yeah. I still think it's TJ Luxemore's fault somehow. I think
it's always TJ Luxemore's fault. Yeah. But since that Buffalo game,
I don't want to get into too many rants. What do you guys think about Sam Girard? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, God. Yeah. Move on to the back. Over the weekend, the Avalanche played back-to-back games on Saturday and Sunday. And first was up against Nashville Predators, where Blackwood had started. And Blackwood, surprisingly, after having two very soft games, was actually able to be the best player on the ice.
Oh, we're moving on. I see.
Barring any other player playing on the ice that night, Blackwood said, "Hey, Wedgwood, I know you've been doing great so far, but here, let me just one up you here for this game."
Dude said, "Hold my beer."
Yeah, I'll post a 36 save. I'll post how many shots they have? What, 35, 36? I'll post a 36 save shutout. And you're going to deal with it until, you know, Wedgwood did the same thing the next night.
It was 35.
Actually. Yeah. I'm loving the competition between the goalies right now. I think it's a really – I was thinking after the Blackwood one, I was like, that's got to be some fun, healthy competition. And then Wedgwood goes out and puts up a shutout. First of the season and first of this – yeah, for Wedgwood.
With so, what I will – like – very like feel free to argue this point because it very well could be like invalid in two of what seemed like some of the worst games this season for the team on the ice. Two very sleepy performances. I think up until the second period of the Blackhawks game where you could maybe start to make an argument that they start to find their legs and wake up, which is a little, I guess, uncharacteristic for the Avs on a back-to-back. It's normally they're sleepiest, like they're losing their legs a little bit. They're tired from traveling and playing on back-to-back days. But that's really where they start to find most of their game. And it's a dominant performance, especially, I mean, against the Blackhawks, a team that put up 11 shots on you in the first period, and you go and hold them to one in the second period, putting 19 on them. Like that is Spencer Knight, all props to him, only allowing one goal in that stretch. That's, I mean, insane. But going back to the Blackwood conversation too, I think it's really, really interesting. And I loved, I'm going to do another shameless plug of our last episode when we talked with Connor McGahee, and I asked him if there was a goaltending battle on their hands. And he was like, who the heck cares? Because of the way these guys are performing. And Mackenzie Blackwood just put his stamp of approval on that and said, you know, watch me. Like, I understand I've been trying to find my game. He even said that in his like post-game locker room speech, getting the game puck. But he was like, thanks for sticking with me as I find my game. And he absolutely found it. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that this is some of the best goaltending we've seen from this team in years past.
I know a certain somebody who's on this podcast who I'm related to, and his name is not Quinn, though, who will inevitably, when the Avalanche hit their rough patch, I think most teams in sports do when they start this hot, and especially with an Olympics year, you know, you got that time off. So I think their Avs are going to hit a rough patch. I think you will always be second guessing. Oh, you should have played Blackwood. Oh, you should have played. Grant will do that. I'm just going to predict it now to our listeners who listen a lot. Okay. Grant will, and I'm thinking March, when the Avs maybe drop two in a row.
No, it's going to be late January. It's going to be like January 22nd, around about.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy birthday, Grant. they will. You will hear from somebody who sounds like me, but whose name is Grant. Wow. Bednar's blowing this. Thoughts, Grant?
That's already happened.
No. When the Avalanche, I have been saying on this podcast specifically that the fall of the Avalanche wall is coming. It's coming here soon. I don't know when it's gonna happen. But the only thing that I'm going to complain about is certain lineup decisions regarding and certain trade decisions regarding a certain left-handed defenseman who does not deserve to be on this team anymore.
Okay.
I planted
second this best player on that Predators game, Sam Girard.
Yeah.
According to expected goals percentage, no. According to every metric, he's actually the lowest on the team behind, guess who? Martin Natchez in that Predators game.
But Grant, the eye test.
Says you're You know who looks great on an eye test?
Your mom.
You got three.
You can't say that, man.
You got three, three brothers here. You know who looks great on the eye test is Martin Natchez in the early regular season. You know where he doesn't look great on the eye test? In the playoffs when it counts.
Can I say something too? I feel like I've been kind of a Debbie Downer so far, because the Avs have been playing well. But that Predators shutout, I'm like, okay, fine. But like the Penguins shut out the Predators too. Like, I'm not gonna,
I'm not gonna,
there's
lose
not
my
a
mind
lot of stars.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God, you know, if they shut out, you know, a good team, I'd be like, oh dang. I mean, they shut out the Predators, and then they played like dog water against the Blackhawks up until the second period. I don't know. I mean, I think
But the biggest thing with the Avalanche, at least last season and the season before that, was you were splitting games. You were splitting games with the worst teams in the NHL. When the Montreal Canadiens were in last place 2 years ago, you actually got swept in the season series. With the Blackhawks, you went two out of four. And while you can say, yeah, we only shut out the Predators, those are games that you need to win regardless if you're going to be top dog in the West, or if you're going to win the Central, if you're going to have home ice, like those are teams that you need to beat. And if you're going to beat them with a shutout, that's even better.
I get that. But sometimes it feels like, oh, we're, you know, throwing a little parade here for being down on the Preds. And, you know, I agree with beating up Predators, but you should have won. I'm just like, okay.
I think to Grant's point, or at least the alternate personality of Grant, because it is the same guy just talking in three different times. I think to Grant's point, I agree with him saying that, like, for a lot of these games, I keep finding myself thinking, like, the Avs lose these games last year. Mm-hmm. and the year before that, especially in the 23 season. You have all these games where, especially the Preds and the Hawks, where these are trap games where it's like, all right, guys, we're done with the opponents that are like at 500 or just a little bit below, and Bettman pity points, you know, all this stuff. Like, we're finally at teams that are bad, especially the Hawks that have always given the Avs fits because they just decide to play the best hockey of their lives.
Big brother, baby.
Yeah,
we've been calling them Big Brother for years.
The Hawks always want to play their best hockey against the Avs, despite having an awful streak at that point. They're just like, yeah, let's do it. And it's always the most annoying thing in the world. But I honestly, like, the amount of patience the Avs have shown in almost every game except the Preds game, where they'll just, you know, they're going to fix it the next period. It's just been a great thing to see. When before, you would be like, you'd be looking at the standings saying like, oh, if we won this game, there's 2 points there. If we won this game, there's 2 points there. That, like, and so you can convince yourself to about 6 points that the Avs should have won at this point. And now you're not looking at that at all. You're looking at the overtime losses, sure. But when you're riding a 9-game win streak, and I think it's no coincidence, like, the reason why the Avs have been so good and so disciplined mentally, like, let's think about the number 9 for a sec. The number 9, I'm going to become a game theorist real quick. The number 9 also has significance to Norse mythology. Do you know who else is Norse? Gabe Landeskog, the Swedish captain of the Colorado Avalanche. So, I think Landeskog has a serious pull on this team, and the emotional maturity of a guy in the room, not just as a coach, but a guy in the room, which players say all the time is the biggest reason a team does well, is a guy that says, this is what we need to do. The coaches don't even need to go tell them what to do. It's a guy that just sits the team down and tells them what's up. That's the biggest winning formula. And I think it's no coincidence that the captain comes back in the Avalanche play like this.
Well, I was listening to Daily Faceoff and Frank Cervalli, even though I don't really like him because he's kind of a hothead. But
hot take.
Mm.
It's not a very hot take.
Pot calling the kettle black, as our grandma used to say.
Thanks, Sarah Melly.
You know, he was interviewing someone, and they were talking about the Colorado Avalanche, and they were talking about MVPs of the Avalanche, not MVPs of the NHL, but MVPs of the Avalanche. And you do, like, it is strange to think that these professional athletes need your captain and Gabriel Landeskog to right the ship, and like for MacKinnon not to be the leader of the locker room, for Cale Makar not to be the leader of the locker room, and having that as Gabriel Landeskog so that MacKinnon and Makar can just go do essentially what they need to do and let Landeskog kind of have the room. I also do think that the team morale has dramatically improved ever since Georgiev was thankfully shipped off the team,
he's in the KHL, by the way.
I feel bad for that guy.
Drury, Wedgwood's been a good personality guy for the locker room. Blackwood's been a good personality guy for the locker room. Brock Nelson seems to bring a little bit more age and wisdom to the mix.
Even Natchez isn't bad, right?
Correct.
Better than that dirty.
Not in leadership.
5 points. Gerard's got 5 points this year.
Does he?
Let you know who that's.
Is that his plus minus? Maybe
that's his plus minus.
-5.
I don't need to get into another Gerard rant because I could. I could.
We're not getting into another Sam Gerard rant.
I could do it right now.
Apologies. He's got his plus minus is 5. He has 2 points.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think Landeskog sets the tone in that locker room, and that matters. I mean, you can't have Nathan MacKinnon who's frowning at Skittles. Like, that's not going to go along well. Yeah. I mean, that's great that you want to win, but, like, relax, guy.
He's the Michael Jordan of the NHL.
No.
I think that the biggest
he's a LeBron James of the NHL.
Hey, I think I talked about Michael and LeBron in my last podcast.
You did.
We made it.
But, all right. Good night, everyone. Classify them as generational. And what does generational mean?
Oh my God. No, I'm not getting into this conversation again. I saw Bailey's DNVR podcast. Fine, I'll get into it. I saw Bailey's DNVR podcast. And you know what they talk
Rage
about?
Is Kale word.
McCarr a once in a generation player? You know why he's not once in a generation? Because you have number 97 in the league at the same time. And if we're going to say once in a generation, it is Connor McDavid, who might go down as the best player of all time, skills-wise and talent-wise.
Doesn't McCarr play defense?
But no, so that's the argument that he's making is Kale McCarr cannot be a generational talent because Connor McDavid exists.
Lemieux is the generational talent of his era because he plays in the same era as Wayne Gretzky.
This is the argument that
they play
on
different parts of the ice.
Trying to compare generational talents on forward versus defense is like trying to compare oranges to grapefruits. Like they're very, very
well.
Similar.
Normally, people say apples to oranges.
I have my argument here, Grant. No, I'm continuing my argument before you
spoke. You spoke, Grant. Let Bailey speak.
It's like comparing oranges to grapefruits. Like they're very, very similar, and like you know, you still expect points, but their genetic makeup is different enough to classify them differently. And that is how I view generational talents. Like
that was. That was not the title of your podcast. The title of your podcast was Kale McCarr, the player of his generation. And no, he's not, because there's Connor McDavid in the league at the same time. So he is not the talent of
the
his generation.
Obviously, you didn't listen to the entire podcast because what
your thumbnail was misleading and the title was misleading.
Go listen to the podcast then. Give us a view. That'd be great. But no, what we talked about was that at the forward position, Connor McDavid, no question. At the defensive position, it's Kale McCarr, no question. And both can exist at the same time.
Oh, I actually have an update for you all. According to Jaren Dreger, Darren Dreger, Scott Wedgwood has been added to Canada's list for possible Olympic participation.
Which is very, very new because when we talked to him after practice today, he said Team Canada had not reached out to him yet.
They're not going to take him.
They probably saw that and were like, check on Bennington's numbers.
Well,
and
no,
like,
because
Jared
Bednar called them out in his presser saying he should be.
I believe it.
So, anyway. We're talking about Scott Wedgwood's generational in my heart.
So much wood. Scott Wedgwood is generational.
I said in my heart.
Gavin's
can't wait to
Scott
cheer against them in February. I can't wait to.
Team USA all the way. Team USA. Yeah.
Oh,
that's
God.
Right.
Oh, my God. That's
maple so syrup yeah, is that's... maple syrup isn't that good.
It's actually
but yeah so that's
there's
that's
a picture of me giving the bird the maple syrup.
There is I look back at it frequently actually. So let's while we're talking about generational talents and the one that the Avalanche have and Kale McCarr, sorry Grant, you are wrong. Let's go ahead and get into the good things. Obviously, you know, the Colorado Avalanche, 9 wins in a row, double digit point streak in a row. Like that's an incredible thing and something I couldn't imagine myself saying last year, the way that they are currently dominating the league. I want to read out some stats for you here and looking at the league standings. The Colorado Avalanche, as of right now, currently lead the league at 37 points. The closest team in second, the Carolina Hurricanes at 30 points. Dallas Stars right underneath them at 30 points.
Well, Dallas Stars are about to be at 32 because they're kicking the crap out of Edmonton right now.
Yes, but still, that's a 7-point lead on not only the best team out in the East currently, but the second best team in your division. That is an insane run. The Avalanche are still currently the only team in the league with only one regulation loss. They're the fourth team in NHL history, or fourth team in NHL history to go to 20 games with only one or less regulation losses, which is still an insane stat for me to read out. The team closest to them there, if I'm not mistaken, there's a couple teams that have five regulation losses in the Dallas Stars, the Seattle Kraken, and the Vegas Golden Knights. Only five regulation losses, which is still, you know, impressive in their own right, but it's not one. So, begs the question. It can be a who, it can be a what. What or who has been performing above your expectations for the season and below your expectations for the season to get the Avs to where they are currently? Grant, we'll start with you.
Great. On the spot. I think the no-brainer answer is Scott Wedgwood. Okay. That's the no-brainer answer. But I actually want to talk about somebody who I think has stepped up significantly, and that is Sam Malinsky. Yeah. He, for not having Solovyov, then Ashan, then this defenseman, then that defenseman, this defenseman, that defenseman, he has, throughout the season, maintained to be a very capable, even second-pairing defenseman, if you want to call him that. I don't really know what's going on with the bottom four for D, really, because they all kind of played the same amount of minutes. But, like, you'll see Brent Burns more out there in, like, when the other team pulls the goalie or he's on the penalty kill. But, like, Malinsky plays more five-on-five time, which is a little
That's also – you're talking about Brent Burns, a guy who is a notorious pucks-on-net guy.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But, you know, Malinsky's – he is 11 points, and he's a plus 13. I know people don't like plus-minus as a stat, but I do. He is on the ice when – and good things are happening as opposed to not good things. I mean, he has 11 points and is a plus 13, which means he's contributing – to being in the offensive zone. But that would be my pick. I think he has more than earned a spot in the second pair defenseman when Brent Burns is let go next season. And then they're going to have to find someone to go with Manson. Or you just, you know, get him a different D partner than Samuel Girard, because I would be really happy about that. And $5 million and $5 million is a lot for a guy who's 5'10", 175 and gets hurt in the playoffs. Especially Jeff, with the postseason cap coming in too.
So is that your below expectation is Sam Girard through?
Well, my below expectation is actually a little bit sadder than that. It's Devon Taves, who for the life of him cannot score a goal.
He plays defense.
That didn't stop him last year when he put up 14 goals in the season before that, where he put up 13 goals. And the fact defense. That if you look at him when the Avalanche won their cup in 2022, that he actually had 7 goals in those playoffs, and you need scoring from everywhere, especially if he's going to be your top pair defenseman. Matthias Ekholm is out goal scoring Devon Taves right now. That's not great.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was going to be that was going to be mine, is for everybody on the team so far that is performing the way that they are. Devon Taves is kind of the odd man out for me. And I say this with all the love in the world for what Devon Taves is doing defensively. I mean, he's been especially this weekend was one of my kind of standouts for as far as a defensive game goes. But if we're looking at goals on the season, Devon Taves and Sam Girard, but I'm not counting that yet because he's only played 7 games. Devon Taves, Samuel Girard, and Joel Kiviranta are the only main roster guys without a goal this season. And 2 of those guys have been injured for a good portion of it. This is the point that I keep harping on too, is I keep trying to find that Devon Taves that we saw last season, who is really, really good in the final minutes, notched a lot of game winners for this team, was really, really important as far as, you know, winning characteristic of this team goes last season. And I mean, he's providing well for a Cale Makar who is already on Norris pace for this season in assists alone. Like, he's currently in the top 10 of skaters alone when it comes to scoring, which is a crazy concept to me. And Cale Makar has a solid defensive partner in Devontaeves that allows Cale Makar to go and do the things that he does to contribute in the offensive zone, which I think is great. But, comma, and I think it is a little interesting with as much range as the Avalanche love to shoot with. They're unfortunately a very good perimeter team. They love getting shots off from the boards and the blue line. And Devontaeves hasn't been super involved in that.
Nah.
Quinn,
what do you think?
Hold on.
We haven't heard from Quinn.
Quinn, go ahead. Yeah, Quinn.
No, I mean, he hasn't put the puck in the net, but I'm also with Reed. He plays defense.
Fair.
Yeah.
He plays defense. And, I mean, last year, right, he was putting puckets in the back of the net, but we didn't get off to the hot start that we're doing now, right? So.
Okay. That's valid.
Yeah, Gavin? I mean, yeah, he hasn't performed as well as he should.
Yeah. I was going to say mine was Taves for sure. I think you look at everyone else that's quote-unquote underperforming, and it's like Kibi Ranta, who you don't expect to put up any points. He's purely there as a defensive wing. And Devontaeves, like, currently has 7 assists in 22 games, is on pace for 26 assists and 0 goals across an entire season. And for, what is he making, $7.2 million or something like that? Mm-hmm. That's not enough for a guy that's going to get half the production he usually does. Like, I do expect Taves to come back and put up a lot of points. It's a guy that you're waiting to activate, but don't need quite much to activate right now. So that's a testament to how kind of a sleeping giant that you have right now with the Avalanche.
But plus 16 on the season so far, too.
His defensive, he's been great defensively, as always. But it's his offense. Like, I noticed what you were saying, Bailey. Like, I don't notice him at all offensively. Like, he's gotten robbed for sure on a couple of chances. I think really all it takes is hockey and all sports is such a mental game. Like, I think he gets his goal and he's going to just pop off immediately. But it's just, right now, aside from one or two good chances he has across the last 9 games, I'm just not noticing him at all offensively, except when it's negative. I remember, like, watching the Rangers game, and I was like, oh my God, why is Taves on power play too? Like, why is Malinsky not here?
Yeah. Like, Malinsky had such a good game during the Rangers game. I'm like,
Taves cannot play offense for his life. I don't understand why Malinsky isn't put in over all situations over Taves right now.
I think that's too much responsibility.
I don't think so at all. I think Taves has done nothing with the responsibility, frankly. And I think that in a winning team, to send a proper message, I would rather have someone else there. I think Taves is the only low at this point in time, and you're expecting him to do better. And I'm not worried about him as much. But, yeah, for my highs, I think I would say, just looking at the stats, I mean, I was a Brock Nelson believer. I love Big Brock. I think he's...
BCB, baby.
BCB. Hide your
Peter kid. City Gym Leader.
Yeah, exactly. Peter City Gym Leader, whatever you want to call him.
Using Linux.
I think he's been... Honestly, like we talked about through the first 10 games or whatever, it's the reason why you always want to give players 10 game stretches. I think Nelson was fine. Like, he had a good process, which is what everyone said. He's been like the best defensively in his entire
mechanically
career,
he's been wonderful,
which is crazy to see that he's had this defensive edge to him, which is crazy because it's not something that was really that prevalent before in his career. But he doesn't really have the swag, is the best way I can describe it, that he has now. Like, seeing him try all these things, like seeing him be effective offensively, that like move he tried against the Predators where he just breaks in alone, I was like, all right, I didn't know Nelson was like this. From a guy who looks like his favorite food is toast, like I just would never expect him to be this flashy. Honestly, I think he's definitely been, especially with Nichushkin injured, he is the guy you needed to step up with, especially with what you're paying him. And he has in almost every way. I think he's on pace for like 25 goals. I noticed in the first part, like he was not good with the puck. He was just bobbling it. He wasn't looking like really great. And Evan Rahl actually brought it up. He was like, he has a pretty gnarly scar on his hand from Bowen Byram's skate flying up and cutting him.
Yeah.
And that seemingly maybe gave him some discomfort for a few games, but it seems to be healed now. And Nelson's been who you need him to be. I mean, I'm gonna glaze Victor Olofsson as well. What a great signing that was. I think Olofsson's been a great addition, is basically Burakovsky for you, is who he was in the playoffs, like a third line guy that scores goals when you need him. And obviously we all know Lecky. He's great. He always is. And other than that, I mean, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Grant. Burns and Malinsky are my other two guys. I just love both of them.
Quinn, throw it over to you. Your positive and negative for the season.
Yeah, really what this team reminds me of are the Peyton Manning Broncos. Really good at the start of the season, and then we taper off towards the end. I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how things shape out over the next couple of games, right? But I think you're starting to see that a little bit in the Rangers game. I think it was the Predators are just such a bad team that I think the talent ended up winning that game. And then in the Blackhawks game, we played them pretty close. I agree we turned it on in the second period. And on a back-to-back, that's kind of interesting, right? But they just give me that vibe of the Peyton Manning Broncos. And, yeah, that you know, we got to a couple Super Bowls with them. But really, it's just can they sustain it on the back end of the season? We've been very fortunate from an injury perspective, especially to the top six, right? So like, as long as we can kind of maintain that, I think we'll be okay. But it's just something to keep in mind. As far as players go, I think you guys really nailed it on the head, right? Taze's not done offensively what we would expect him to. Hopefully he kind of catches on later. Sam Girard, the best defenseman maybe in the game.
No. That's just rage Agreed. Bait for Grant, is it?
Agree.
Nope. All right, we're losing Grant. No,
I mean, look, all kidding aside, the entire team's played great. You can't have that big of a lead and a stranglehold on the NHL over the first 22 games or so without being good, right? Did he really just go to the bathroom?
No, he's walking up the stairs now, I think.
All right. Anyway, so you can't have that many holes in the ship when you're that great first 22 games in. I think really what it is all about moving forward is, can you sustain that? Can you sustain that momentum, especially with a break coming with the Olympics and moving that into March and the rest of the playoffs?
Okay. Reed, you're high and low so far.
Yeah, my high of the season has been the schedule. The schedule has been our best player. I
really?
Count
you say that eight, with all of the back-to-backs that they've had.
Well, yeah, they've had some back-to-backs, but I count 8 games that they should have won that they ended up winning. And honestly, I just, when they play tough teams, I don't know. I don't know about this team. Like, I think we're going to hit that skid. And I think when the playoffs come around, and I hate talking about clutch gene, but like, these overtime losses are not good.
They don't play 3-on-3 in the playoffs.
That's what I was going to bring up. Yeah. Does that even matter?
Reed.
I get that. But I'm just saying, like, you look at the schedule and the games that they've won and the games that they've lost. When they play good teams, they play them tight and they lose in overtime. I mean, these are close games. And in hockey, when a puck can bounce off of somebody's skull and go into the net, and that's the difference. I think we're glazing this team a little too much. So I'm going to say, I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm saying schedule high so far. We've had a good schedule. It's helped us out.
I'm going to put this to you this way. And I hate giving Chris McFarland any comments or any positive comments. I'm going to put it to you this way. The biggest struggle for the Avalanche in the postseason last season was the fact that their penalty kill could not stop the power play of the Dallas Stars when it mattered most. I think that's probably the biggest emphasis point, because every single big goal that the Dallas Stars had was on the power play. Avalanche are second in the league, top three in the league in penalty kill, and they're the number one team 5-on-5 by a wide margin. Their goals percentage on 5-on-5 is 65.8%. The next closest team is the Capitals at 62.64%, and then after that, it's the Hurricanes at 57%. That kind of 5-on-5 play, especially if in the playoffs when penalties or refs do a worse job than they do in the regular season, you gotta win 5-on-5. Yeah. You can't let the power play bail you out, because that's what happened two seasons ago when the Avalanche played the Dallas Stars after beating Winnipeg, was that they completely relied on the power play and they could not generate anything 5-on-5. At least this season so far, they've demonstrated that they're pretty good on the penalty kill and they're really good 5-on-5.
But what are they bad at? And how I started this show for the listeners who are not watching and who are not privy to our pre-show,
which is everyone.
I have a whiteboard. I've been taking notes and erasing notes. I didn't have time. I came in to this pre-show, to this show, and what was the first thing I wrote? Our PP sucks.
I'm back. actually, you wrote "I'm back" first, and then you wrote
"PP sucks." No, I wrote "He's back" because he is back. But our power play sucks. I say that's our low so far. We're terrible. And
you're saying going 4-for-6 against the New Jersey Devils is horrible.
Our power play is terrible because there is a lack of mindset on this stupid power play between Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, where they go, "I want to treat this as a passing drill in practice."
Well, yeah, agreed.
And I don't want to. I don't want to. Hey, Nathan MacKinnon and Martin Natchez, when you put hung 4 on the power play against the Devils, who were number 3 in penalty kill at that time, you know what you did? You simplified. You went, "I am going to shoot this one-timer so hard at that goalie, I don't care what happens." And guess what happened? You scored.
Grant, I have no stats to back this up. I wanted to look it up today. I ran out of time. And this would be a deep dive stat. I think this slingshot nonsense, I hate it. I hate this. Dump the puck, chase the puck, hit somebody behind the net, bring it back out to the point.
That's terrible.
No, I watched this
3 yards
power play. I watched this damn power play. Okay. And they're like, you know, Rycroft and Mosier are like, "Oh, they're struggling. And then I see us try and dangle through the blue line. It gets stolen because they're playing like the Hawks were playing pretty aggressive on the penalty kill.
They pinched the blue line,
put the puck immediately back down the ice, and they're like, "Oh, it's just not working. Oh, it's just not." Maybe mix it up. Maybe dump the puck. Just try it for once. I'm so sick of this slingshot nonsense. Nate just try and stick handle his way in. Maybe he gets through. Maybe he doesn't. But against aggressive penalty killing, that doesn't work, and it hasn't been working. They need to switch that up. And that's been my low this season, has been the power play, especially recently. And that in the postseason will kill you, because if you get a penalty and you can't capitalize and you're away, that's a minus on you. Now you've lost a bunch of momentum. They're losing momentum against the Blackhawks. You know, they have a power play. They don't convert. Hell, the Blackhawks get more shots on goal than we get shots on goal. That's putting momentum in the other direction.
Oh, Grant's drawing X's and O's for our viewing listeners.
You can do X's and O's all you want.
You're mad at a slingshot method that has been established throughout the NHL, especially for an Avalanche team who does terrible with their top stars on a dump and chase method, where MacKinnon and Natchez are famous for not going into the boards and actually winning puck battles up against the boards. Gavin, I want to hear from you.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I'm at a loss with the power play. I was trying to say like, oh, different personnel, whatever. They've tried mixing it up so much. I have no idea. I don't even know if it's a personnel issue. I think it's
Valeri Nichushkin honestly needs to come back.
Yeah, you can't be your sole like reason. It's such a bad thing to depend on.
Yeah, they need to get dirty on the power play. They're not.
Oh yeah, that's the best way they've scored. They honestly need to just start shooting the puck more. That's the easiest thing. And you hear so much talk about like, oh well, who's the true coach of the power play? Like, I think it's more MacKinnon deciding things. MacKinnon should be fired from the power play coach. He fucking sucks at it. He's fire right. I don't know what a good power play looks like. And it's because you're a moron and you try the dumbest shit day in, day out. And it's honestly like, I have no other words to describe it. I would like to see Nelson back on there because I think Nelson is playing a lot better at this point in time. I would like to see him net front because Lehkonen sucks at it. And that's something that I think might help a little bit because he's way more of a shot guy and great at jumping on rebounds. But other than that, the power play is just horrible. There's no excusing it. It's come through for you, thankfully, in big moments against like good opponents. I don't know.
The power play might suck. Somebody could pick it up here in the next week. You know what you can do? You can go and bet on that. And you know who you can bet that with is DraftKings Sportsbook. We're going to throw it over to our sponsor really quickly before we get back to the show.
Spinoramas, Michigan goals, a sprawling save across the crease. Live and breathe all the highlight moments with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers, bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN to turn $5 into $200 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPENY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gambling resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer. Copyright NHL 2025. All rights reserved.
Thank you again so much to DraftKings for sponsoring. Is there anything else we want to touch on for these highs and lows?
Who read that? Who just read that?
Absolutely.
It's probably going to be me.
It's
great it job, Bailey. Never you. Wow. It is always me.
Wow. Best read ever.
Lord. And that intro? Wow.
Yeah. That, Bailey. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Talk about a segue. You give that to a ball cup.
The only thing I want to add, the last thing I want to add in terms of highs and lows to the Avalanche of this season so far is, I guess the only thing is, I don't know how the top line can look so dominant one night and then so unrecognizable the next. It's been a weird phenomenon because, like we talked about on our last podcast, plug Bailey's piece that she did on the goaltenders too. We'll plug that as well since we're just plugging everything here.
It's a red piece. Go be a diehard. Go become a diehard. We're doing a big sale anyway.
But the biggest thing is like we talk about consistency from goaltending, and we talk about consistency from all of these other places. And we have gotten that at time and with MacKinnon, especially in Lehkonen. Nature has fallen into the Mikko Rantanen pit hole of he either has a really, really, really good game, he has a bad game, but he does one thing to like make it so you don't think that he had such a terrible game, or he's so terrible that he's turning over pucks in the D zone and you go, dude, what are you doing? So that's my last little thing for ups and downs.
If nobody else has anything to add, let's go ahead and get into some newsworthy pieces from the last little bit. Reed, you bring up a good point for listeners. We're going to get into some Mika Rantanen and talk here in a little bit, because I know that's what everybody with the Colorado Avalanche loves to talk about, apparently. But some newsworthy stuff as far as the injury front goes. And we touched on it a little bit with the Avs, for the most part, being pretty healthy as far as their top six goes. The only guy there struggling maybe a little bit to get back in the lineup is Valeri Nichushkin, who was considered week to week. Bednar did mention today at practice that he is getting closer. He did a full skate with the team today in a red no contact jersey, and he still looks to be a little ways out, but for all intents and purposes, getting closer. No updates on a Gavin Brindley or a Logan O'Connor, who Logan O'Connor, apparently his hip feels great, but he's had some other little things come up injury-wise through his rehabbing of his hip. So we're kind of waiting on him to get back to where he needs to be. Also, congratulations on the birth of his child, Brooks Graham O'Connor, I believe. So congrats to the O'Connor family there. But yeah, it'll be a little bit before we see a Gavin Brindley or a Logan O'Connor. The big piece to touch on, and big, I guess, is a relative term because we're getting any sort of depth back, is a Joel Kiviranta, who only played a couple games before getting injured, lower body, knee situation. And so, yeah, that's just another piece of the depth that you get back for this team. Improves the bottom six tremendously. Gavin, as you mentioned, being a really, really solid defensive piece to add back to an already really good defensive team. One of the stats I forgot to bring up when I was previewing, you know, what a high this Avalanche team is right now is goal differential. Let's talk about this for a second and how Joel Kiviranta might be able to add to that. The Colorado Avalanche currently sit on a plus 38 for goal differential. You want to know what the Carolina Hurricanes are currently sitting at?
Plus 19.
Plus 13.
Oh, did it go? Oh, I thought I heard plus 19.
The Carolina Hurricanes, the Dallas Stars, and the Anaheim Ducks all together are still lower than what the Avalanche currently hold at a goal differential. That's crazy. And a lot of that has to do with defensive guys like Joel Kiviranta, and him coming back into the fold is going to be a huge help defensively to this team.
I think the biggest thing with Joel Kiviranta is that they're running out of guys to put on the penalty kill, because you don't really want Lehkonen on the penalty kill as long as you would really like to. And especially in recent games when Parker Kelly and Jack Drury have been taking injuries, you're throwing Zakhar Barkov out there, and who is directly responsible for the second JT Miller goal against the Rangers, where he's not pushing up on the against Adam Fox. And I don't expect him to. I don't think he's ever been on the penalty kill in his career. And you're kind of just throwing him into that because you're running out of people. And you can't really teach, like, the penalty kill isn't something that you pick up in a day, really, unless you've been playing it your entire career. Mm-hmm. But it'll be good to have Kiviranta back to throw on the penalty kill. Because you had it where it was Lehkonen, Nelson. Your mainstays were Lehkonen, Nelson, Drury, and Kelly. And then you were throwing Barkov out there. You threw Gavin Brindley out there when he was on the ice for a little bit. That's probably why the New York Rangers scored two power play goals, was because we had Zakhar Barkov out there. And he's not a penalty killer. Nope. He's more offensively gifted than he is defensively. But he's improving defensively too. I got to give him credit there.
Yep.
Gavin?
Yeah, I think, Kivi definitely helps bring some balance to the bottom six, and also, of course, to the penalty kill, like you mentioned. I think I just, as many AHLers as we don't have in our lineup is how I prefer it, and Kiviranta brings us one step closer.
It's a guy who has Bednar's trust.
Right. It's a guy that you don't have to call up a Taylor Makar for and a Tristan Nielsen, which, no offense to those guys, I mean, they've been playing well, but I'd rather have a solidified NHLer in the lineup like Kiviranta, who is reliable, doesn't cost you goals, especially with with Logan O'Connor seemingly just having weird injuries, he's starting to become kind of an injury prone player at this point. He's had two major surgeries in the last two seasons. And with Brindley also being out, also kind of an injury concern. I think he's had, he was injured in the AHL last season and is injured now.
Yeah.
It sucks to see against probably the best player we've ever seen in our life.
I also don't,
I mean, talk about generational. Gavin Brindley is the best.
Yeah, I really quickly before letting you continue, I don't know how much of that I put on Gavin Brindley being injury prone. That was a kind of horrible missed call.
Well, hey, look what happens when you're less than 5 foot 10 in the NHL.
For sure. I mean, the weird thing is I don't understand why it's a lower body injury. Like, I would assume because he got smoked in the shoulder, and I don't really understand. And I guess it's not his shoulder it's that's injured. It's some other lower body injury. So he might have been playing injured, and it kind of got turned into that situation. But I think, no, I mean, with the lineup right now, I think you're looking at – I think Gavin Brindley, something that I keep thinking about is he seems more a lot like a Ross Colton kind of guy. I know Bednar is super high on him. Like everyone, which like I am not as high on him as Bednar is. I don't think he's a top six player, but I think he's. I think he'll be a Ross Colton type, where it's like, oh, what is his role? I don't know. And Tampa Bay Lightning didn't know with Ross Colton. The Avs kind of don't know what Ross Colton's role is. He kind of just fills in. I think Brindley will have a very similar career trajectory. I think they're very similar together. I just wanted to make that comparison, but. Yeah, I think you're just waiting for your glue guys to come back at this point. But the Avs are still healthy enough that they should be going out and playing at least 700 hockey, which they can reliably coast to for the rest of the season and do not have to keep putting up this tight. If this is the best stretch the Avs have all season, I would not be surprised.
I was going to pose this question. I'll pose this to you, Reed and Quinn. Sort of already answered, I guess, but being on the nine-game win streak that they are, only having one regulation loss to their name, only having lost five games in overtime. And we've talked about beyond the nine-game win streak, the point streak that they currently hold. Is this sustainable hockey? Can this be an Avalanche team that maybe you don't see taper out towards the end of the season?
Quinn, go ahead.
No, you, by all means.
Oh, well, I keep getting muted.
You can thank Grant for that.
Oh, I'm just researching stats over here. I think Quinn and I have both said we don't think so. I'll let Quinn speak for himself, but I'll speak for myself. No, I don't think they'll continue on this pace. I mean, it's nice. I don't look at overtime losses. I mean, I know you get a point, but I don't look at that as like, oh, a good thing, you know, because like you tell your friends who don't really watch hockey, you're like, oh, the Avs have only lost one game. And they're like, well, didn't they lose in a shootout too? And it's like, oh yeah, well, but didn't they lose in overtime too? Oh,
but they got a point out of it, Reed.
No, I get it. But it's like, you know, in the regular season, you finish the game tied, and because we're not lazy Europeans, we try and get a winner out of this thing. So, you know, they play till somebody wins, but I'm like, well, we still lost. So I don't like, but back to my point, I mean, I don't think this is sustainable. I think they're going to drop off. I think January is going to be tough schedule wise for them. I said that when I was on our little preview show when I was on here last, but you look at like who they're playing in January, they've got some tougher teams coming up, and then teams that like, they play the Maple Leafs on the 12th of January. And you'd say, oh, the Maple Leafs suck, but you know, they're fighting for their lives. So I'm sure that'll be a tough game.
They're a dumpster fire.
So they got a lot of true right now, but the expectation on that team is to do well. So I think you're going to get, by the time January comes around, you're going to get a lot of tough games. So I don't think they'll keep this up. I do think they'll be the best team in hockey this year. That's my hot take of the day. Just based off of this start, but I don't think they're going to be like this good stats wise and record wise.
And before I throw it over to Quinn, I do want to that point, like, yes, the Maple Leafs suck, but with the way the Avalanche are playing right now, like, they are the measuring stick. Like, yes. Any team that you play right now, whether it be the Vegas Golden Knights, the Dallas Stars, the Nashville Predators, the St. Louis Blues, whoever it might be, you are getting the best hockey out of your opponent because you are the measuring stick for the league currently. Quinn.
Yes.
I mean, in a way, I kind of don't really care if this continues. I think what they've done with this hot start is I think that they've earned – I know it's early, and there's that saying in hockey where if you're in a playoff position by Thanksgiving, you're probably going to make the playoffs, right? Or at least that's been historically the trend.
Yeah.
But in a way, kind of who cares? I think the entire thing about this team for the longest stretch is they've been dominant in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And aside from a really good postseason in 21-22, or in 22, this team has been kind of a no-show. So, like, who cares for the rest of the season? I mean, honestly, just play 500 hockey. Just get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
But don't you think that establishes bad habits?
No. For the playoffs? I don't.
Well, Grant, I mean, coming from you talking about Natchez all the time, we're like, oh, he's playing really well. And then you go like, oh, what about the playoffs? And so, like, yeah, I kind of, honestly, I'm kind of coming around to that point. It's like, yeah, not to be too cocky. I mean, we are Rocky fans here, so. Bad things happen to us, but they will probably make the playoffs. So at this point, Quinn does make a good point. It's like, yeah, they'll make the playoffs.
But you don't want to develop good habits. You don't want to develop good things.
I don't think that's the case. Like in professional sports, much like in professional life, I don't think it's the case where you just all of a sudden forget how to do your job. I think it on a night in, night out basis during the regular season, anything can happen, right? Anything can happen.
Well, it's funny you say that because the Flyers actually two seasons ago had gotten off to an 18-point lead and still missed the playoffs.
No, the Flyers are not the Avs. That's not a good comparison.
Not guaranteed these things.
No, you're not guaranteed.
The only thing that the Avalanche need to do. Go ahead, Quinn.
No. Take it. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the only thing they need to be concerned about in the regular season, and I was blabbing at this to my wife the other day. You kind of want to try to finish top of the Western Central. You want to be top of the Central. You don't want to have to play the Stars in the first round again.
No,
I think that's where like we say, oh, they're going to make the playoffs. Oh, can they keep this up? It doesn't really matter. I do think that matters, though. I really don't think you want to see the Stars first round.
I mean, but like, does it? Like, you're like, in all reality, you're probably going to play the Stars sometime in the playoffs. Does it matter if it's the first round or the second round?
Sure, but if you've already won. A series, you know, they've won a series. I think you want to see them later on. I think you want to get into that playoff hockey. And as a fan, it's like, I want to see them make the second round too. So I'd much rather have them play the sucky mammoth who stole our lacrosse name over the Stars who I cannot stand. And
with the mammoth playing the way they are, they might not make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's fine. I agree with
they
you.
And a fall from grace.
I think I agree with that. I think it's I'd rather the Avs actually get to a start and build something in the first round and then go into that second round hot off of the momentum. Because it's weird. Like analysts will tell you that momentum doesn't exist in sports, and players will tell you that momentum exists in sports. So it's kind of a weird thing that is an intangible. And I think that that's what the Avalanche really could have used last season, especially with their lineup that was so new and jumbled together that didn't have a chance to gel correctly. I think having an extra series would really help to just cement your playoff hockey, which I think will help regardless, even with the Avs looking like a well-oiled machine already. But yeah, I'm just curious, who do you guys think we're going to play in the first round? Like, let's assume the Avalanche do well and we do get the first wild card spot or the second wild card team as the first seed in the West. I'm looking at the Seattle Kraken. I'm thinking that's not sustainable. They're not going to play as well. Might get them again. Might have to get that rematch going from 23. That would be great.
Edmonton.
School the Mammoth. Show them who their daddy is. That'd be great.
Edmonton, I don't think, does it.
No, Edmonton's not.
Edmonton, I think, is going to. I mean, Stu Skinner gave up four goals on eight shots. And mind you, those eight shots were not all high danger chances.
It's Georgiev all over again. It really is for them.
I love the idea of the Avalanche potentially playing now. They're not in a playoff position right now. I don't know if they'll get back to that point, but a Chicago Blackhawks or maybe even a San Jose Sharks. Like, Celebrini's killing it right now.
Talk about that unsustainable. Askarov and Spencer Knight have save percentages in the 920s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Spencer Knight is currently the best goaltender in the league.
I mean, he'll probably win the Vezina, but if we're going to talk about sustainability here, there is no way on God's green earth that a 24-year-old Spencer Knight is about to carry this joke of a defense in the Blackhawks to a wild card slot.
No,
that's not possible. If it does happen, we can clip this and repeat it. We can clip this and repeat it as many times as humanly possible. But if Spencer Knight at the current moment has a 927 save percentage with a goals against average of 2.2, with that defense in front of him, it cannot happen. And that is a slap in the face to the Minnesota Wild, to the Winnipeg Jets, who are currently out of a playoff spot at the current moment, the Edmonton Oilers. If you're losing to this, guys, you really got to relook at your team here.
Yeah. I can't even remember. When was the last time the Avs played the Blackhawks in a playoff series?
Was the last time the Blackhawks were in the playoffs?
Well, yeah, they had their dominant early 2010s. So that was, but I think the Avs and the Hawks have always missed each other in their dominance eras. I think they were always up and down. So they never, Stars, I don't think they've ever played each other.
It was Minnesota Wild in 16-17. Then it was Calgary and Blues. Then it was, you know, a bunch of teams, but they've never played the Blackhawks in the playoffs.
Interesting.
Thank goodness.
I want to ask a very superficial question before we get into our final topic. Does the President's Trophy curse matter?
Yes, absolutely. Next question.
I don't think so.
Absolutely. Next question.
I see Quinn shaking his head.
I mean, I think it matters to the extent of what your goals are for each team, right? If you're trying to get the President's Trophy, I think that distracts you from what you really want to do, which is do well in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I also think that in hockey, unlike other sports, the winner of the regular season is not necessarily the winner at the end, just because I think there are different styles of hockey that do well in different parts of the year. I think the postseason is entirely different as compared to a regular season.
Fair. Can't blow your load too early, Bailey. Can't blow the load
too
early.
Oh, my God.
Cut that out. Yeah.
You said you edit these things. I don't like that at all. I don't like that one bit.
I mean... Who cares if you win the President's Trophy? It's like going 16-0. Who cares?
Yeah.
If you don't win the last game of the year, who cares?
Agree. Agree with everything Quinn said. It's almost like I said it myself because I am Quinn.
And we sound.
And you are Grant.
So our last topic of the day is Mikko Rantanen and how he deserved to be suspended twice, right?
Dirty player.
So. Two game misconducts in three games, if I'm not mistaken. Like, that's for let's go ahead and chat about this, because Mikko Rantanen, that first one I could maybe defend him a little bit here, because he gets his skate clipped with the stick, he puts his arms out to brace himself, and unfortunately Romanov is the collateral there, and all well wishes to Alexander Romanov, who is out with shoulder surgery 5 to 6 months. I could maybe see it, you lay off him a little bit there, maybe that's accidental and a really unfortunate situation occurred because of it. The second one against Coronado, I didn't like that one bit. I don't care if maybe Coronado turns just a little bit. Mika Rantanen had his eyes on the numbers from the freaking blue line.
It doesn't matter that he turned last second. It's the fact that you follow through with the hit.
No, you see him quite literally push his stick to turn him into the boards.
Yeah. Also, the first one, I'm just going to say this right here, right? He gets tripped by Mayfield. Now, I don't know about anybody else here, but when I get tripped in hockey, I kind of fall, you know? And I understand.
And usually there's nobody else around you.
Exactly. And normally I fall and I kind of slide into the boards like a toddler would slide on ice. I've never in my life like willingly put out my hands to like brace myself for the impact, because firstly, that's a really good way to break your wrist, because, you know, if you're going to go into the end boards with your wrists extended and flexed, that's a really good way to break your wrist. Secondly, if he falls and he maybe hits his shoulder against the boards and, like, you know, submarines Romanov on, you know, like on accident, that's a lot better. But like, I've never seen someone actively falling, but still was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make sure I finish this check on the numbers. Thank you very much. And the Coronado one, he had him lined up. He was gliding into the hit. He had time to lay up.
Yeah. Forget it. I had somebody on Twitter reach out to me, be like, hey, you know, we learned from an early age that, you know, we're not supposed to turn our back at the last second. One, again, Mika Rantanen has hit his sights on Coronado from distance. Like, that's not okay. Two, you know what we also learned early on? Boarding's a freaking penalty. Boarding, you are not supposed to hit people into the boards from the numbers. And the way Rantanen did that in that second hit, he is all but guiding him into the boards. Like, that's not okay to me. Like, I don't generally see Mikko Rantanen as a dirty player. That's not how I viewed him in his career. But that to me screams like that is not okay. So.
I never liked the guy. I'll be honest with you. When they traded him, I'm like, oh, he was good, but that's not even me. Like,
that's a hot take.
That he's on the Stars. Like, when he was on the Avs and McKinnon was hurt and he was having that 50 goal season or whatever, he had his really good season. I was like, oh, I don't care. I don't like this guy. Never liked Mikko Rantanen. There, I said it.
NHLPA is not doing their job this season, by the way. There have been a lot of game misconducts and they have not suspended any. Well, Mikko Rantanen on a formality. They didn't even suspend him for the actual consequence.
That was in the rule book, and I'm fairly certain that's why they laid off of another suspension. Is because
why does that matter?
Game misconduct in back-to-back games results in a mandatory one-game suspension. I don't agree with it. Like, that one-game suspension, okay, fine. Like, I'm glad he got that. There should have been something more to it.
If that's Nazem Kadri, that's 10 games suspended.
Yeah, but that's also Nazem Kadri, who has history.
A history.
Mikko Rantanen has also had a history, by the way. People want to say that this didn't happen when he was in an Avalanche uniform. There were so many times where that dude flies off the handle and actually goes after someone with malicious intent. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
There's a famous clip of Brad Marchand saying that everybody's trying to injure everyone out there, which I don't disagree with. But I mean, the fact is that this happened with Mikko on the Avalanche. He just didn't do it as blatantly. And he has had a history of boardings and game misconducts and everything. And I was listening to the Steve Dangle podcast today, and it's like, if you're not going to follow through with the suspension, other than the formality that you have to suspend the guy because you put it in your rules, you're setting a precedence where if I am a budding superstar and I can almost do whatever I want because, you know, Bettman doesn't want the superstars to be out of the game because they're the top draw. And I was like, this is kind of ridiculous because if you're gonna commit two
flagrant boardings, and they are boarding still. You still can't hit a guy on the numbers if you're tripped. You still can't hit a guy a number if he's turning at the last second to dump the puck and rim it around the boards. Those are still boarding calls, and you're still getting game misconduct. You need to be suspending him for longer than one game on a formality. That's not how this should work. Sam Bennett absolutely runs over Anthony Stolarz in the playoffs, and he doesn't get a suspension with a prior history because the Panthers are the top, one of the top draws in the NHL. This is ridiculous.
The conversation I also want to bring up, and Gavin, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this too, is the constant like, oh, he learned from the best, and saying like Gabe Landeskog's not a dirty player. You know how he became a dirty player as soon as he left the Avalanche. Both can be true. Like Gabe Landeskog can have a dirty history while also calling Mikko Rantanen a guy who's had maybe some dirty plays.
Kirby Dock
in the last couple games.
Yeah, I think it just depends on it's such a hard line. Like you can cherry pick hits or whatever that a player will do. Like, yeah, Landeskog is a physical player for sure. He does stuff before where I'm like, dude, why are you doing that? Yeah. But like I remember seeing the comparison, which like, all right.
I feel like that's gonna happen with the rivalry between these two teams. Like it's bound to be Twitter banter. But
yeah, of course. And I just wanted to not a rivalry to the Avs actually win a series, first of all. But also, yeah, with the comparison with Jamie Benn though is like, yeah, you have a player that makes boneheaded hits all the time with intent to injure, but also you don't see Gabe Landeskog just being the diviest player and actively trying to be a rat. So there's a little difference between being a dirty player and that actively goes out to just injure and being a guy who's more of a power forward. It's a hard line to walk, but I mean, really, I'm just not that interested in the conversation. It's going to be what it's going to be. All that matters really is that you go out and win in the postseason. And unfortunately for the Avs, we have to endure whole regular seasons before we get to games that actually matter.
Yep. That's all I got. Anybody else have anything to add on a lengthy episode?
Do we have any listeners left?
I guess the only thing I want to add is that, contrary to popular belief, there are different people on this show today. There are actually two different voices.
Three?
Two?
Three?
You got it wrong.
There are two different voices. There are two other different voices than my own that may sound similar to me, but there are two different voices, and
there might be three voices.
You might see them. Only one. You might see them sooner rather than later, because for some reason, my two co-hosts love to get these two on here just to grind my gears.
It's chaos, and I'm so here for it.
Our next episode is Sam Girard generational.
I want to be there for that.
Quinn, wow. Reed, thank you so much for hopping on. Do each of you have anything you'd like to plug as we wrap this thing up?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Turkey Day, everyone. Eat lots of gobble gobble.
You don't have any.
You know what? That's actually what I want to talk about. Favorite Thanksgiving side. Go.
Oh God, no, I'm gonna get flamed Andy, for mine.
Yeah, sweet potato casserole with marshmallows on top.
You're allowed to be wrong. It's fine.
Oh my God.
All right.
That's a good answer. Well, I mean, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. But that's like that. I don't know. That's
you're
like
allowed to be Gerard wrong.
Is your favorite Av? It's like wow.
wait, stop. Don't even come at me.
You know,
sweet potato casserole with marshmallows on top is the best Thanksgiving side. Shut your mouth.
I'm from the South. You're allowed to be wrong.
Yeah, you also think vinegar-based
barbecue.
Do you like sweet potatoes? You're not a sweet potato guy?
I'll do sweet potato fries. That's about all you'll get out of me.
One of the only foods that triggers my gag reflex. I do not like sweet potatoes.
Mm. You also think I can see vinegar-based barbecue is a good idea.
You could see
we don't need to get into a barbecue conversation.
That's not a Thanksgiving food.
Barbecue sucks.
Sticking to Thanksgiving.
Okay, nope. Boom! Different conversation. We're sticking to Thanksgiving. Both of you can be wrong. It's okay.
I'm not wrong. I'm right.
I'm going mashed potatoes. Hey, back to Quinn's question. I'm going mashed potatoes. It's safe, but you know, everybody makes mashed potatoes, so mashed potatoes.
Okay. Quinn.
Gavin.
What are we thinking?
I think I want to be buried in stuffing. Like, if you just, like, put that in the casket, I'd be okay with that.
Stuff me
Quinn
up.
Quinn loves
stuffing.
Being stuffed. Yeah,
I like it.
Keep that.
I would say, how is that
not getting cut?
Keep it.
I would say, for me, I don't. It's funny that no one mentions turkey because
it's not a side though.
That's the entree, not the side.
Yeah, we're asking about sides.
Oh, side. I don't know if this counts as a side. It's so tough. It's the glue that holds everything together. It makes Thanksgiving the best. Gravy.
No, it's gravy.
Good gravy makes or breaks Thanksgiving.
If there's no gravy on your mashed potatoes and your turkey, you're gonna tell me that your Thanksgiving isn't good.
If you walk into that room and
you're munching on food and you're telling me if they don't come out and be like, oh guys, no gravy at the grocery store today. You're not upset? Like, the dinner's the same? You're going to tell me that? No.
Have you guys heard of the thing where people take mashed potatoes and they make it into a little bowl and then they stuff everything in and they put the gravy on top of it?
That is how you do it.
We have been brothers for my entire life. I have never seen you do that, ever.
Dude, we do it all
the time.
Well, to
be fair, we don't have Thanksgiving dinner. Really,
you don't even do it at Christmas
anymore.
We can
talk about that later.
You don't even do it at Christmas when we have turkey.
Bailey, go. You got to cut out the Christmas talk. Holiday season.
I am aware that mine is an L take, but I am still confident with it. Green bean casserole.
Oh God, no!
Good night, everyone.
No.
Well, done well, it can be very good.
No.
I would say done well. It's the third best.
Hold on a minute. How did Quinn not say cranberry sauce?
I love cranberry. No, I want to be buried with stuffing. Like I will eat stuffing year round.
Cranberry sauce. I understand we're dragging this out. Cranberry sauce from a can or homemade?
Homemade. It does not matter.
Hold on. If we're gonna get into, I had a heated conversation today.
No,
they said pumpkin pie was the best pie to have during Thanksgiving, and I rejected comment. Nope. I rejected this comment because a certain person,
pecan pie
in this podcast has put me onto the pecan pie. Not as good as apple pie, but pecan pie is the one to have at Thanksgiving.
Yes,
pumpkin pie is not good.
Yeah, people who have pumpkin pie and they pass on the pecan pie, I sneer at them. I sneer at family. And I know certain family members who will not eat the pecan, but they will eat the pumpkin. And they're messed up in the head. They're messed up in the head.
Yeah. We're not gonna expose family.
We're not gonna name names.
Well,
we won't say it on air.
We'll say it off air. We won't say it on air.
We can say it off air, but we're gonna keep. Camille, I'm so sorry if you're watching this.
She's not watching this.
No,
my mother-in-law. Camille and my mother-in-law. There you go.
You heard it here first.
They pass up pecan pie.
They pass up pecan for pumpkin, and it just pisses me off every year. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
So what's better on the pie though? Is Cool Whip better on the pie, or is it ice or vanilla ice cream on the pie? Which one's better?
Cool Whip. Yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I've had Cool Whip.
That's such a lie. You had
can't have pie without Cool Whip.
Cool Whip.
No, I always get the Ruddy Whip going.
Well, hold on, though.
That's not Cool Whip.
Cool Whip versus whipped cream. Whipped cream's better than Cool Whip.
Yeah. Oh, that's a conversation you're going to have with Quinn.
No. Good stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. Quinn is adamant that we have Cool Whip every time we have pecan pie. Quinn
it's
is
fun to say.
About it.
Yeah.
Are we still on?
Yes.
We haven't ended yet.
This is all going in, bud.
Would you say pecan pie is generational?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Apple pie is better.
The kale macar.
Apple pie is better. It is better. Look, and I will not hear this.
Are you saying
apple pie is like Sam
is
Gerard?
That your
I'm a red-blooded American, but I do not like apple pie more than I like pecan pie.
Oh God, no! No sane
I love the stars
like
and
apple
stripes
pie more than pecan pie. Yeah, like, if you have that is the biggest L take I can possibly think of.
Apple pie is better than pecan pie.
No.
I feel like pecan pie I want with like Ready Whip or Cool Whip. Apple pie I want with ice cream. And they both are both like an equally like great dish. I can't decide which one's better. With
apple
like that.
Better. Apple pie is better.
Yeah, no, it's pecan pie. The answer is
100%.
It's apple pie. Do we do polls? Do we have like a Twitter page? Do we
I can put out a poll.
The listener just sees a 2-hour podcast, and at the end, the poll under it is apple or pecan. Like, what happened, dude? That's
right. Put apple parentheses not good versus pecan parentheses. This is the right answer.
No, apple pie is a better pie than pecan pie.
Oh my god,
Quinn.
A warm apple pie is better. We've had this conversation.
What if it's cold?
A warm apple pie, if we have nothing to add to it, pecan pie is not better than apple pie.
I don't know about that one. I don't know about
Grant,
that.
Grant, this is the worst opinion you've ever had.
No, the worst opinion I've ever had was saying that carrot cake wasn't that bad.
Carrot cake is delicious. Even your own defense of a bad take is a bad take.
Carrot cake is not good.
Carrot cake is not good.
That is a worse L take than mine.
But the fact that you would have the cojones, dare I say, to come on air and scream to the public that apple pie is better than pecan pie?
It is better. At least it's not pumpkin.
I don't know. You're uninvited to Thanksgiving.
I'm going on the trip.
You're going to have to ride with mom the entire way.
No, we don't need to get into this. Tune in next week where we'll talk about carrot cake.
Breed, Quinn, do you guys have any socials you want to plug before we move on with outros?
Yeah,
I'm anonymous.
Well, we have Nomadic Gnome, though, and there's Nomadic Gnome.
Oh man, I haven't got on the gnome in a while, but check it out. It's on Instagram. Can't remember the handle. Sorry.
Nomadic Gnome 55 on Instagram.
Gavin, where can the people find you?
Go find me over at Avalanche Digest. We post a lot shorter videos than this one, where we talk about all things about your favorite team, the Avalanche. Better be your favorite team. Go check it out right now. We got a video about the Avalanche's historic season. Go Broncos, go Nuggets, go Avs. I think I listed all the Colorado sports teams. There's no other ones.
The Rockies.
Nope, never heard of them.
Not professional, at least.
Who are the Colorado Rockies?
He was only talking about the big four professional teams.
What about the Rapids?
Big four professional teams.
We're talking about the ones we care about, yeah.
Grant, soccer, where can the people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Grant_Foster_15. I just complain about refs and the Avalanche being stupid at times.
You got 2 hours of that tonight.
And you might see me enter the occasional. You might see me enter the occasional giveaway for something. So,
before I get into all of my stuff, thank you again to the Hockey Podcast Network for allowing us to do what we do, and our wonderful sponsor over at DraftKings Sportsbook. If you guys are looking for a show on the other 31 mediocre NHL teams in the league, you can go find a show about them over on our network. Be sure to check out those shows over at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. Follow them on their socials at HockeyPodNet on both X and Instagram. Again, with our THPN code over at DraftKings, new users, go and check that out. As far as my stuff goes, you can check me out over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Instagram over at Bailey Lynn Curtis. I am the resident Colorado Avalanche beat reporter with DNVR Avalanche, so be sure to go check out our page over at DNVR Sports and DNVR Avalanche. We are currently running a Black Friday giveaway for all diehards and a really cool deal, so go sign up to be a diehard today for a really, really good deal. Go check out some of the shirts and other merch. It's awesome. With that, that's going to do it for today's episode. Again, thank you guys so much for watching. Next week may or may not be just as chaotic. We shall see. But until next time, this has been the Avalanche Warning. See ya.